And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. Not just one, but two bowhead whales were harvested in the same afternoon near St. Lawrence Island. The catch came as whaling leaders from Western Alaska and the North Slope attended a meeting in Anchorage. And as KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, the news prompted celebrations across the state.
From a conference room at the Crown Plaza in Anchorage, John Wahi Jr. asked to take the floor.
He said, "I have to read you this text," and he was so excited, and he read it.
This is Jenny Evans, the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission's communications director, recounting the moment.
You know, you say, "Yay, hey, hey." When you get a whale, that's what they say. They go, "Yay, hey, hey."
Wahi Jr. broke the news that Savunga-based whaling captain Charles Edwards had just caught a bowhead whale.
We said a prayer and thanked the Lord for providing for the community, and then everyone was hugging, and it was awesome.
Shortly after, news rang out that Savunga's neighbor on St. Lawrence Island, Gamble, also caught a bowhead just 1 mile offshore. The Gamble crew was captained by Glenn Tungayan, with his younger brother Ruben Tungayan serving as striker. As the news spread, boats rallied to help tow the massive whales ashore, a process that took several hours in the late hours Thursday night. While pulling the bowhead ashore in Gamble, a curious polar bear was spotted following the distinct smell. Men with rifles stood by as the community worked into the late evening to harvest the whale. The catch prompted the Gamble School to cancel open gym hours Thursday night and called for a whale in-service day Friday to give students an opportunity to take part in the occasion. On Facebook, hundreds of users shared their congratulations and comments and shares. A long weekend of cutting, gutting, and storing the bowheads await for the two communities. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
And as for the weather, it's 21 degrees and foggy this afternoon in Juneau. It looks like we have more clear and cold days on the way. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. A recent state report found that the Alaska Office of Children's Services failed to offer enough support for a foster child with aggressive behaviors. That's according to an investigation into a 2022 complaint from a foster parent. The report from the state ombudsman's office found that, in part, OCS did not follow policy when making a placement decision for the child, did not fully explain the child's behaviors to a foster parent, and mishandled protective services reports about child maltreatment. It found OCS did not fully provide appropriate mental health interventions for a child with complex needs. A spokesperson for OCS said in an email that OCS is committed to addressing the recommendations from the ombudsman. Kate Burkhart is the Alaska ombudsman. Her job is to evaluate the way Alaska state departments do their jobs from an objective third-party perspective.
We give people who don't have a voice a voice. So often in child protection cases, when foster parents feel like they have been treated unfairly by the agency, they don't have a lot of recourse.
Her report responded to six allegations from the foster parent and offered recommendations. One complaint that OCS unfairly investigated the foster parent was not supported by the evidence. But the other complaints were supported by evidence found in its investigation. The ombudsman worked with the Office of Children's Services to discuss the findings and propose possible recommendations.
In this case, OCS and the Department of Family and Community Services and the Department of Health all participated in that process to help ensure that our recommendations made the most sense and really led to improved services for foster youth that have complex disabilities and needs.
The ombudsman publicly released five recommendations related to the case. OCS accepted most of them. It partially rejected the recommendation that OCS develop policy and procedures to address the issue of child-on-child sexual abuse between children in its system. The ombudsman's office made the same suggestions after a similar case in 2017. The agency said it's unable to create a standard definition of child-on-child sex abuse because it's unable to investigate a child as a perpetrator. Burkhart says the ombudsman doesn't have the power to enforce these recommendations if agencies choose not to follow them. OCS accepted a recommendation to create and file foster parent agreements that address a child's known behavior with foster parent placements, and another to strengthen new relationships with other state agencies and programs. And hospitals across the country are reeling from the collapse of a staffing agency for emergency medicine doctors, and it's left emergency department physicians in Ketchikan facing months of work without pay. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
The emergency room at Peace Health Medical Center in Ketchikan is staffed 24 hours a day. For many services, it's the only option on the island. The medical center is what's called a critical access hospital. someone comes in badly hurt, the goal is to stabilize them until they can get them to a bigger hospital in Seattle or Anchorage. It's often a critical step in keeping people alive. But recently, emergency room physicians went multiple months without pay, and to some, the future of services seemed uncertain. Sarah Hines is a nurse practitioner in the Peace Health ER. She says at the end of October, the physicians received an email saying payroll would be late.
So then I found out by just talking to the other providers that they weren't getting paid at all. So they were working for free since the end of August. And additionally, the NES couldn't provide them with proof that they had medical malpractice insurance.
NES was a third-party firm that staffed Peace Health's emergency department. Jared Kosin, CEO of the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association, says it's basically a one-stop staffing shop. The hospital pays a fee, and the staffing agency does the rest and provides a group of physicians. They also provide malpractice insurance, which an emergency physician literally can't work without.
And the group, you know, still becomes integrated in the community, but it's a way of basically contracting for services. And having them take care of the recruitment and supply of the physicians, the billing, all of that stuff.
The California-based company staffed around 35 ERs across the country, everywhere from Ketchikan to Texas to Philadelphia. At the end of October, they sent those 35 hospitals scrambling when they announced that they didn't have the money to pay their doctors. In the October email from CEO Jose Aguirre's office, NES blamed the missed paychecks on transitioning to a new billing company. It's just a temporary shortfall, they said. Everyone will be paid and made whole. That never happened. Instead, Aguirre and the firm's chief medical officer resigned. At the end of November, they sent a brief five-sentence email saying the company would, quote, wind down its operations and cease doing business. Hines says at this point, there was a sense of panic.
I mean, that's just, you know, dangerous for them because that's their whole livelihood at stake. And then we have some new providers who just recently moved to Ketchikan to cover and help us out, you know, that we're going to be long-term providers here and they can't pay their bills.
Kosin says for physicians and hospitals, the situation was dire.
That's a huge deal, right? If you're not getting paid for doing your job, that affects your livelihood and ultimately can affect your ability to be there and be present in that situation.
And some hospitals across the country did have to suspend services and shut down their emergency rooms in recent weeks due to NES's closure. But in Ketchikan, emergency room physicians and staff kept working without pay.
I know these physicians really want to stay here and they want to provide for a community, but their hands are kind of tied right now because of NES.
And you may be thinking, couldn't Peace Health just step in and pay the physicians? Kosin says there are a lot of rules.
I think there would be a lot of compliance and analysis that would have to be done to make sure everything is being done in a way that complies with all the rules and regulations that are in place at the federal level.
Peace Health Ketchikan's communications manager, Kate Govars, echoed this in an email. She said Peace Health's hands are sort of tied legally regarding back pay for work the physicians did while under contract with NES. In mid-November, the physicians group entered into an agreement with the hospital to keep working. A staff member, who wanted to remain anonymous, provided KRBD with a screenshot of a clause in the contract addressing the unpaid wages. It said Peace Health, quote, desires and intends to provide additional compensation to physician in recognition of uncompensated services physician provided at the hospital. But it said that was not addressed in this agreement. In email, Govars confirmed Peace Health extended contracts that cover malpractice insurance and compensation. But Govars said she couldn't comment on the new contract or any additional agreements because they got into individual personnel matters, which Peace Health holds confidential. Govars also wrote that Peace Health is committed to keeping the emergency room open and that they, quote, care deeply for our staff and value the care they extend to the community. Hines, a six-year Ketchikan resident, says that staff have been serving the community well.
This group we have now is just fantastic. They're really good, and our community would really benefit by keeping them here. The problem in Ketchikan is we just don't have a pool of people to pull from.
Hines said their last payment from the staffing firm came at the end of September for work that they did in August. By the time Peace Health started paying them at the end of November, the emergency room staff were out 2.5 months of wages, with no guarantee they'd ever see that money. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And the opening race of Bethel's dog sled mushing season has been postponed due to a lack of snow. While the season opener, the first race of the regional Delta Championship Series, was set to kick off this weekend, Kuskokwim 300 race manager Paul Basile said this kind of rescheduling doesn't come as a big surprise.
We have a pretty good record of getting all seven of our races in every winter, and we're able to do that just by being flexible and just having races when there's snow. And, you know, we just kind of bob and weave with the weather as it comes.
Basile says routes for the opening 32-mile dash and others throughout the season are picked based on conditions at the time and can vary depending on weather. As for last weekend, while the Kuskokwim was on track to freeze up, Basile said it's the lack of snow that caused for postponement. It's also about giving the teams a chance to train.
That's a consideration, too, when we postpone a race, is just, especially early in the season, is just, you know, thinking about whether or not the kennels in our region are ready to do it.
While there's no set date for the race's reschedule, Basile says the Kuskokwim 300 committee plans to assess conditions and make a decision with the goal of giving racers as much notice as possible. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 28 degrees and foggy this afternoon. The low tonight dips down to 21 degrees, and tomorrow it looks like it'll be sunny and cold as well, with a high of 30 and a low of 17. It looks like we could get some snow later in the week with a 70% chance on Thursday. You're listening to KTOO. For more news, go to ktoo.org.